coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is a special broadcast of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman, HagmanReportLive.com. That's HagmanReportLive.com. HagmanReport.com as well. This weekend, Alex Jones had done a great expose, him and Greg Reese and others there. I want to build upon that. Dr. Francis Boyle appeared, made an appearance, and it's clear. It's clear what we're, I think it's clear what we're dealing with right now. I want to start this off right away. Again, a special broadcast insert here about war. War declared upon the American people. War declared upon us. War declared upon us by the deep state, members of the deep state, specifically members of the medical deep state. Medical tyranny is what we're dealing with. As it turns out, there was an article in the Daily Mail. Actually, the headline changed twice, but here is the deal. We are dealing with a coronavirus where the U.S. government under Obama, specifically under Obama, gave $3.7 million grant to Wuhan lab that experimented on the coronavirus source bats. Now, this is kind of an interesting article. You have to dig through this. The Chinese laboratory at the center of scrutiny, as this reads, over this potential coronavirus leak has been using U.S. government money to carry out research on bats from the caves, which scientists believe are the original source of the deadly outbreak. Now, stop right there. And again, I'll put the link in the program description box only at Hagman Report Live. Nowhere else. Hagman Report Live. Okay. Now, consider this. If you are a police officer and or a military vet, but specifically, I can't relate to a military vet, but I'm sure you've been in a position where you are walking in a field or walking in a, you're entering into a situation and you got that hair on the back of your neck, hinky feeling like, hey, I've been here before. I know we're going somewhere. It ain't good. Whatever's going to happen next is not good. Experience tells me, my gut tells me, you know, something bad is about to happen. Well, this is kind of how I felt when I was looking through this information, digging deep. I've got just piles of information that is pretty significant. But here is the situation. Here's the message I want to get across to you. It is my belief, based on my research, my investigation, that war has been declared upon the American people, specifically the American people, but all of the West, but specifically with respect to the economy, war by the Chinese operating in tandem with the political left here in the United States, members of the deep state, members of the neocon right as well. But this is a war against the American people, against President Trump, and a war to implement this ID 2020, ID Act. Everyone gets chipped. Everyone has this biometric, if you will. No work. I mean, no chip, no work, no certificate of vaccination ID kind of thing, no work. That's where I think we're headed. Now, I say that it's pretty big. It's a pretty big claim. Here's the situation. I got the feeling when I was researching all of this, remember the anthrax attacks of 2001, late 2001, 2002. Remember they talked about the weaponization of anthrax. Remember they spoke about how, what was it, a trillion spores per gram, and this could only have been accomplished in a military-grade BSL-4 kind of laboratory. Well, when you look at the coronavirus, my message is this. We heard early on and continued to hear intermittently that this is aerosolized, it's airborne, it can last on surfaces, I mean, even today, last on surfaces for extended lengths of time. You know, the social distancing of 3 feet, 6 feet, whatever it might be, is really 20 feet or more. This could hang in the air for a while, aerosolized. Well, how can that be accomplished? That can only be accomplished in a BSL-4 kind of laboratory. All right, so when you start digging into this, back some time ago, it's on HagmanReport.com, a Harvard University professor and two Chinese nationals charged in three separate China-related cases. Now, Dr. Lieber was at the center of this, and he was the head of the chemistry or head of the lab at Harvard. Now, let me explain this to you, okay? You're going to have factcheck.org come out and say, look, he has nothing to do with coronavirus, nothing whatsoever. In fact, the question is it true that federal agents arrested Harvard professor Charles Lieber for creating the coronavirus? Simple answer is no. And that's accurate. It's no. However, as chair of the Harvard's Chemistry and Chemical Biological Laboratory, Lieber is the most high profile of the three that were arrested, two Chinese and Lieber, of course. And what does he do? He's involved in the nanotechnology aspect of things at Harvard. Nanotechnology. What did we see with respect to the weaponization of anthrax spores? A form of nanotechnology. And I'm not going to get into the scientific nomenclature of this, but the bottom line is we're seeing, in at least in my view, a situation where the weaponization of the coronavirus, and there are many coronaviruses, different coronaviruses, could have been created in a BSL-4 laboratory, complements of the Harvard scientists and or the University of North Carolina in conjunction with the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases and the National Institute of Health. The latter two, of course, having ties to both, specifically Fauci and also Burks. Like a ton of bricks, though. But this was all done under Obama. Now, the National Institute of Health had lifted a pause on the gain of function research, with respect to the, coronavirus work and the, modeling or the construction of the coronavirus. This particular coronavirus. So when you look at things in a kind of a larger mosaic, as I like to call it, you're seeing things being put together, compartmentalized weapons, specifically the coronavirus as a weapon. But again, you're going to find Fact Check and Snopes and other places saying, well, Lieber had nothing to do with the creation of the coronavirus. And technically they're correct. But that's also like saying, look, you know, I don't need any analogies. If you are not directly involved in the creation of the coronavirus, but you're involved in the weaponization of that type of virus, although you can claim innocence on one end, you can't claim it necessarily on the other. The nanotech side of things is what I'm interested in. Understand that it's my belief, based on everything I've researched, that it's their intent, the deep state intent, to burn it all down. In other words, they see the dream, the goal, the objective of their new world, one world order, of slipping away from them, especially with the with Donald Trump being the go-between between the American people, or the stopgap between the American people, the West, and this globalist agenda. It's interesting that the United States intelligence services knew about this specific virus out in the open back at the end of November. Now, that would suggest that President Trump was read in on some of this. However, what kind of advice was he getting, and, you know, could he rely on the presidential daily briefings and the intelligence estimates, given the fact that he's been burnt so many times, you know, from the intelligence communities? But the important thing here to understand is this nanotechnology in the virus, at work in the virus, could only really come from a BSL-4 lab. And of course, I'd be looking at that lab in Wuhan. All right. One more thing. It's interesting for me, and I would have to, credit Pauly St. George for this, amazing Pauly on her, on the video. It's interesting when right in the early 2000s, the CDC had come out and they were registering deaths from influenza. Very low, as a matter of fact. And if you watch some of her latest videos, you'll see that the numbers were in the three digits across the United States in terms of deaths for or from influenza. Well, as you see with coronavirus, and this has been noted, duly noted, I would say, that they've changed the reporting standards. In other words, if you've got heart disease, diabetes, you're bleeding internally, you've got cancer, you got one eye hanging out of your head, and you got coronavirus, okay, and you die, well, it's a coronavirus death. You can even hear Burks verifying that that's how they've changed the reporting statistics. But we are at war with an offensive biological weapon here. And I think if the American people knew the truth, they could get behind President Trump and they could say, look, we need to clear the deep state, members of the deep state, the hell out of this, this administration. Because they're everywhere. The CDC, National Institute of Health, governmental and NGOs. Bill Gates, I must say, all of a sudden he became this unofficial or titular head of all things vaccine related. And isn't this what this is all about? His mentor, of course, one of his mentors was James Watson. Now, isn't it funny that Bill Gates' father worked for Dr. James Watson? There's also Dr. Foge, who was the director of the CDC from 1977 to 1983, appointed by Carter in the same entire group of people. And again, this is an extremely dangerous, this is not to downplay this virus, because it is an extremely dangerous offensive biological weapon of warfare. Extremely dangerous. As far as I can tell, and you can do your own research on this, the agencies involved in the management, in the pushing the public peril, specifically in the panic, would be the FDA, the University of North Carolina, the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, as well as the National Institute of Health. And notice that Fauci is related to at least two of those. Either pushing the pandemic apparel. Again, it's a bad disease. However, like anthrax of 2001 and 2, this was weaponized. One more thing here. You know what, real quick I want to do, because I don't want to take any more time. Greg Reese did a really great video on this is what I'm talking about here. In fact, let's play Greg Reese's video right now. All right. Until that gets going, I'm just going to talk, and you can hit it right when doesn't matter. You just press the button when you're ready.
Having been through other serious issues, particularly the very painful early years of HIV AIDS, when people talk about conspiracy theories, you will always have conspiracy theories when you have very challenging public health crises. They are nothing but distractions. You know, I can assure you, we have so much to do to protect the health and the welfare of the American people that I would just hope we just put those conspiracy stuff and let somebody write a book about it later on, but not now.
Anthony Fauci does not like conspiracy theories. And if the president does not fire several members of his COVID-19 response team, the books written in the future will likely be about the Bill Gates Big Pharma takeover of America. Dr. Fauci is on the Leadership Council for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Deborah Birx is a board member for the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, which was founded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Robert Redfield, current director of the CDC, was a founder of the Institute of Human Virology, who has received $31.8 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Seema Verna has worked with Sue Desmond-Hellman, chief executive officer of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Alex Azar was president of Eli Lilly's U.S. division. Under his leadership, prices for the company's top-selling insulin drug tripled, which led to a class-action lawsuit. Jerome Adams received a medical scholarship from Eli Lilly. Stephen Hahn is commissioner for the FDA, who partnered with Bill and Melinda Gates in 2017. Stephen Mnuchin was a member of Skull and Bones at Yale University, and he partnered with George Soros to create SFM Capital Management. Brett Giroir was the director of DARPA. And CDC official Dr. Nancy Messonnier is Rod Rosenstein's sister. Many have been concerned that President Trump has been surrounded by deep state operatives for the past 3 years. Well, now he seems to be completely surrounded by Big Pharma and Bill Gates loyalists, all pushing vaccines as the solution and admitting that they might make things worse.
Does the vaccine make you worse? And there are diseases in which you vaccinate someone, they get infected with what you're trying to protect them with, and you actually enhance the infection.
Los Angeles has announced that they're going to pay people to snitch on their neighbors.
You know the old expression about snitches? Well, in this case, snitches get rewards. We want to thank you for turning folks in and making sure we are all safe.
And the public is now being prepared for mandatory certificates of immunity in order to freely leave their homes.
Can you imagine a time where Americans carry certificates of immunity?
You know, that's possible. I mean, it's one of those things that we talk about when we want to make sure that we know who the vulnerable people are and not. This is something that's being discussed. I think it might actually have some merit under certain circumstances.
Welcome to Medical Tyranny 2020. For Infowars.com, this is Greg Reese.
May God be with you. All right, you can stop it right here. All right, Alan, thank you for playing that. And watch for some personnel changes to be made, obviously, if they're not already have been made. But watch, and just not yet announced. So watch for personnel changes to be already made. That, folks, is like you. I don't like to be lied to. I'm an adult. I can accept the truth. I just want to be told the truth. And I do see war in the offing. As President Trump understands more and more what's taking place and what has taken place, both inside the country as well as by communist China, which is why, again, we must refer to this disease, not as COVID-19, that's playing another hand, but as the Communist China Party, Communist Chinese Party, Wuhan virus. Again, a very and extremely contagious offensive biological warfare weapon. All right, I'm going to bring on John Moore. TheLibertyMan.com is his website. John Moore is an accredited investigator, and I'll tell you what, he's got one of the most immensely popular show on Republic Broadcasting Network. If you go to John Moore or TheLibertyMan.com, I should say TheLibertyMan.com, there you can find links to all of his current endeavors, as well as his links to his radio program. John, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Good afternoon, Doug. Good to be with you.
Hey, it's great to be with you as well, and it's great to have you. Thank you for allowing me to lead off with that. I thought it was extremely important. I did some research, and I'm finding some things here that are extremely disturbing, John, that tells me, number one, this whole thing was created. Number two, there was some implements here in the United States with respect to the nanotechnology side of things. Thirdly, with respect to funding without a doubt during the Obama regime, and four members of the deep state, as we like to call it, or as we call it, or as I call it, involved in the perpetuation of this particular situation. So with that, I just I wanted to lead off with that. And I don't know what you think of that.
Okay. Well, let's begin at the beginning. First of all, we're dealing with Chinese, and their belief system is founded in two things. Marxism, of course, and the Chinese culture of understanding and implementing the principles of General Sun Tzu, who authored the book The Art of War, which is about 1,000 years older than the Christian Bible. Communists are many things, but one of the things they're very good at, their leadership is anyway, is understanding human nature, studying human nature, studying their enemy's culture, which is us, understanding their enemy's culture, understanding the people, and how to exploit their enemy by understanding their enemy, understanding what motivates them, what doesn't motivate them, and taking advantage of that. And they've done all these things, Doug. They understand Americans better than we understand ourselves. They understand our culture better than we understand our culture. And they've used and implemented their knowledge to do what they're doing right now, which is bring down our country. At the moment, without a shot being fired, that will change, of course. I'm pretty good friends with Dave Hodges, and Dave's been doing a great job documenting with evidence, verifiable evidence, that we're being set up here by the communist Chinese, the Russians to a certain extent. I think the Russians are content to have Alaska and Canada for the most part. They'll play a role in this. And making use of our internal discord, using it against us with the deep state. The deep state has their own agenda, which is not necessarily connected to the communist Chinese directly in terms of command and control. But the deep state will play along with our adversaries to accomplish what they think is their goals. But they're just being exploited by the communists, of course, in my opinion. The war is a very serious word, but calling it war, I see no alternative, though, except to call it war. World War II began in 1939. So it was going on during 1939, 1940, all 1941 up to December 1941 when the United States got involved. Most Americans don't think of World War II as anything prior to December 7th, 1941. But it had been raging for 3 years before we got involved. And this war is already underway. The president of El Salvador has said so. Something that you and I both need to look into, and we have lots of listeners, Doug, to find out the MOS, its military occupational specialty, of the 1 million men and women who've been called up from the Army Reserve, the National Guard, and the IRR. If they're almost exclusively medical personnel, then it would certainly be related to the COVID-19 Chinese flu. If, however, they've called up the Army Rangers, the Marines, artillery, the heavy mechanized units, armor, the infantry units, combat helicopter people, then something else is going on above and beyond dealing with the Chinese flu. They're getting ready for war. I cannot imagine a legitimate reason for activating 1 million men and women to do with this flu, Doug. Can you think of any reason connected to the communist flu that they would activate 1 million people, put them on active duty?
No, not even if you would segment that million number and put them in the hot spots across the United States, that would still leave. No, and it wouldn't be the best use of personnel either. I'm not a military guy, so I don't know. I'm not going to second guess them, but I think you're dead on accurate. I think that.
Well, here's what you would need. First of all, obviously, your medical people, which would be all anything connected to medical. you need support personnel, because they're going to need support to provide housing and food and transportation, all logistics. And you may need some police to keep the order, military police. What you would never need would be armor and artillery and attack helicopters and infantry. Now, infantry to some extent to be used as police if they needed it, but that would be pretty limited because of the police around the country. We have local police, state police. There's probably enough for them to maintain order, as best I can tell. But there would never be a need for heavy armor, artillery, and infantry divisions to be called up, which we don't know yet. And I have not gotten the information that I can rely on as to who, what exactly kind of personnel are being called up. Do you have any information in that regard, Doug, yourself?
No, but I'll put it out there, folks. If you're listening to this and you are in the know, if you're one of the people who got called up, or if you were part of that decision-making process, studio@hagmanreport.com. I'll share it with John Moore as I get it. And I just need to, you know, look, I need to be able to verify who is sending it, who you are. I won't share that, but I need to know the source so we're not getting hosed. Okay. So studio@hagmanreport.com. Okay. Two N's on Hagman, by the way.
Something that's verifiable, not a friend of a friend said this. We need specifics as to what units are being called up. Now, the IRR, typically the individual ready reserve, people are not part of units, so they would be called up as individuals. But the National Guard and the Army Reserve, they'll be called up as units. And we need to know what those units are. Are they medical? Are they support personnel? Are they heavy artillery? Are they armor? Are they involved with attack helicopters, that kind of thing? So that's kind of details we need, not unsubstantiated rumors that can't be verified. We need verifiable information. And we need it now. This is a fast-moving situation. I'm going to tell you something locally. My hometown, St. Louis, just came up this morning. A local radio talk show host, his name is Mark Cox, on broadcast radio in St. Louis. He had a caller this morning, a man claiming to be a construction worker, claiming to have knowledge of what's going on at Earth City, Missouri. That's a large industrial park at the edge of St. Louis County, about, oh, maybe 2 square miles, maybe larger, originally built by Ford Motor Company, about the National Guard taking over a large warehouse and putting concertina wire around it. The cover story, he describes it as cover story, is it will be a temporary morgue. But he says, why are they putting bunk beds in this place if it's a temporary morgue? So,
yeah, for the comfort of their corpses. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's a local story that I'm hoping to get some verification on that one way or the other before the end of the day. Getting back to war, there was a meeting that took place. I've talked about this publicly for a while now. May of last year in Chicago, the heads of state or the representatives from every country except El Salvador, south of our border, met in Chicago in secret. The intelligence agencies were not able to penetrate their security. So we can only speculate the two things that were talked about. It's a short list of two things. Either splitting up and making more profitable the drug and human trafficking trade, or the details of the invasion and splitting up the booty from invading the United States. We don't believe there's a third option, Doug. As I was saying at the time, this wouldn't take place 4 or 5 years before the event. It may take place a year before the event, not much more. And here we are, 11 months later. And it looks like we're being set up for an invasion. My private sources tell me, Doug, here's the way it'll go down. Civil disorder. Now, I can easily see where we are right now in this lockdown nationwide, leading to food charges, or maybe the EBT cards not working, or both, which would quickly lead to civil disorder, which in turn, according to my sources, would become the civil war. And once we're weak enough from fighting ourselves, then the invasion would take place. Going back to the principles of Sun Tzu, anything that can weaken your enemy before you invade is a good thing. And we would be quite weak after a month or two of civil war. They're hoping that Americans will expend the ungodly amount of ammunition we've got on each other before they invade, which is another part of this. Doug, I'm getting emails from people asking me what they should do. They procrastinated for years, not preparing, not laying in stocks of food and all the other supplies that they would need. And now here they are after their procrastination, scrambling at the last minute to get what's left over. And in terms of highly desirable things such as thermal vision, weapon sights, night vision, the more desirable freeze-dried food, those things are pretty much gone. You may still find some here and there, but as my friend Sam Andrews, my Monday guest, would say, the rich guys bought all that stuff up back in February and March. You can still find ammunition. You may still find some firearms. Firearm sales, as I'm sure you know, Doug, are reaching unprecedented levels right now as we speak.
Yes.
They've never had sales this big, ever. Nationwide, despite the shutdowns in some states of guns. In fact, the ATF is allowing drive-through firearm purchases now, of all things.
Would you like fries with that, with your AK-47?
Yeah. We'd like to supersize that shotgun. Well, I got to maintain a sense of humor. But speaking of sense of humor, I now have some new photographs of my TR-6 posted on my website.
Well, this is good.
I was a young mechanic, the grandson of a friend of mine. I had him by to look at it the other day, and we kicked around some ideas about things to be done in the Triumph. And he brought one of his mechanic buddies by with him, and I showed him the beautiful handmade solid walnut dash for the Triumph, and he was thoroughly impressed by that. And the beautiful English-made wood and stainless steel steering wheel, walnut and stainless steel. This is when cars were cars and men were men. You know, the automobile is steel and walnut and leather. It's a lot of fun. So this time will come and go. I recall a story where in France, the owners of a very desirable collectible car knew the Germans were coming. So they wrapped it up in tar paper and paper and buried it until the war was over.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
it was a Bugatti, by the way.
Okay. Well, we almost, I mean, we could take a lesson from that, I think, in a sense that we almost, maybe that's what we should be doing to some extent. And when I say to some extent, I mean, you know, just take inventory where you're at. What's that?
Americans have a different attitude. You know, we have not had war, open warfare since 1865,
right,
in this landmass. Within loving memory, most other countries have, and they don't look at the world the way we do. They look in gold and silver, different than Americans do. Now, when I was in Vietnam, a peasant rice farmer, his annual income would have been $10. That was a per capita income for rice farmers in South Vietnam and half a century ago. But even despite them being dirt poor, they still owned gold in the form of gold teeth. And when they would die, the gold teeth would be removed, and that would become the legacy for that family, the financial legacy. They would also have a 100-pound bag of rice stored underneath their bed in a family bedroom. And these are poor people, very poor people. But they understood the value of gold. They understood the value of food, despite having very little financial wherewithal. They still had a small amount of gold and a lot of rice because they didn't trust the government. They knew what would stand the test of time. I walked into Buddhist temples over there in Vietnam, Doug, that had been open every day for worship for 1,000 years. In fact, the street in front of it had been built up over the centuries where the street was 2 feet higher than the ground level of the temple because it had been there so many centuries. And Americans don't have that sense of history. I walked across the bridge in Prague, Czech Republic, when I was awarded the Prague Peace Prize 3 summers ago, and the Charles Bridge, where the Czechs stopped the Viking invasion. And my late wife, she said, "Well, honey, how do they stop the Vikings?" I said, "With axes and swords and bows and arrows. That's how they stopped the Vikings." And, you know, when you walk across a bridge like that and you think about the battle that took place there, it gives you a different perspective, a perspective that Americans don't have.
Right.
We simply don't have the legacy, the mindset, the beliefs. When your grandparents saw tanks rolling down the street in front of your house and they told you about that, it gives you a different attitude. Americans can't do that. You know, and the generation who did see it firsthand, what's called the greatest generation, they saw it 1,000 miles away in Europe or 2,000 miles away in the South Pacific. But that legacy is being lost also. So Americans have a steep learning curve here to get to prepare for war and get ready for war, because war is at our doorstep, isn't it, Doug?
I believe so. And I believe what we saw this weekend in the Daily Mail was kind of a shot across the bow to some extent. I have to agree with Greg Reese and even deeper. But look, I think the responsibility for this bioweapon lies directly in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. However, some of the components and some of the nanotechnology supportive delivery systems were complements of people like Lieber from Harvard and others.
And his two Chinese buddies. Now, the Chinese have been, the communists have been making fun of us for more than half a century, publicly saying, quote unquote, "The Americans will sell us the rope that we'll hang them with."
Right.
Isn't that what's taking place here?
It's exactly right. Yes. Yes. And who is selling the rope? I mean, it would be the typically the leftists, the Obama people, the CDC. You know, it blew my mind that, back in the early 2000s, the CDC, when I was looking at this, they were having some trouble, the deaths from influenza. And they were saying, well, you know what? It's just, they're really not that high. And enter Bill Gates into the picture, and all of a sudden you're seeing inflated numbers of deaths from influenza. So that's one subject. And of course that talks about money and grants and stuff like that. But then now you start talking about the weaponization process and the use of this as a biological, and the use of this as a biological by foreign actors, specifically China. And of course, you've got, these useful idiots here in the United States, part of this as well. So, yeah, I mean, yes, to answer your question, yes. Long answer. Yes.
Well, absolutely. Well, there's demonstrable evidence, and that's what you and I like to see, demonstrable evidence of linkage between Fauci and Bill Gates and this BRICS woman and Bill Gates and all his involvement. Lots of stories coming out today that the president may be firing Fauci, which I'd love to see happen. A BRICS woman needs to be gone. BRICS, BRICS woman needs to be gone. And get some patriotic scientists in there to give the president advice that he can count on that's not connected to the pharmaceutical industry. What do you think, Doug?
Absolutely. We need to, you know, that's the thing right now. President Trump had the opportunity, and I'm not sure what happened, but the swamp was not drained. And here we are, a little over 200 days to the 2020 election. There was a lot of time when he could have done a lot of swamp draining. It didn't happen. Of course, he was busy fighting off accusations of Russian collusion, Ukrainian collusion, impeachment, and so on. And here we are. And now he's fighting this. And by the way, I find it interesting that Fauci back in 2017 says, Donald Trump is going to be fighting a massive pandemic. And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but, you know, they're kind of giving the warning signal. So, yeah, but man, we need to clean house. We need to clean house yesterday, because even some of the deep state FISA and FBI and CIA people are still around. And John, when are we going to see, if ever, arrests and perp walks and convictions, indictments, that type of thing, take place here? Are we going to see them or not?
Well, quite frankly, that's taking a second place in my list of priorities to preparing for war. I'd love to see the indictments. It's not going to be 180,000 like QAnon is saying. It may be a couple of dozen, maybe three dozen, to get the top people that can be gotten. I think we've talked about how Hillary, for political reasons, Hillary probably won't be indicted. But if the Department of Justice takes down the Clinton Foundation, that would give people all the evidence they need to know that Hillary Clinton was in this up to her eyeballs, which of course she was and is up to her eyeballs. So it needs to happen. It needs to happen now. Fauci needs to be gone. Birx needs to be gone. There's plenty of credentialed scientists and doctors that could take their place and step in there. Fauci has certainly thoroughly discredited himself in a number of ways. Going after the hydroxyquinine, if I'm saying it right, there's now you keep hearing, oh, it causes problem with your heart. Well, this drug's been prescribed for 65 years. We know damn well what it does to your heart, and it's secondary to what it does in keeping you healthy. Apparently, whatever heart issues they are temporary and not permanent, where you may get some arrhythmia or some minor things that you deal with until you're off the prescription and they're gone. And I'll trade that for saving my life any day of the week, wouldn't you, Doug?
Oh, absolutely. And compared to the scarring, the fibrosis of the lungs subsequent to this virus, or as they said about this virus. Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, you're exactly right. And it's hydroxychloroquine, the Z-Pak and zinc trifecta that was being discussed. And, of course, you really can't say that because, you know, it's they'll take issue with you saying that, oh, this is – you know, this can help. It's amazing to see the people who dislike.
Was it France? Was there 1,000 people in France that took this, and what, everybody but one or two people recovered?
Yeah.
it always makes me wonder if that one or two actually took it or not. So I was telling a friend over the weekend, I said, if I get this Chinese virus, that's what I'm going to take. And don't try to tell me I'm going to take anything else. That's what this cowboy is going to sign up for. And how can you get a vaccine for a virus anyway? I've never heard of a vaccine for a virus that doesn't exist, does it?
No, you know, because first of all, it's like, it's worse than going to the casino crap table. I mean, you know, when I gambled, I like to play craps a lot, but,
they do vaccines for diseases. They do vaccines for diseases.
For polio, for smallpox, yes. Measles.
Right.
But not for flu.
They don't do vaccines for viruses. They can't.
Correct. Yeah, because of the mutation factor, because they don't even know they're not sure of the strain, and they're lucky to get it right. It's a crapshoot, like I said. So, yes.
It's not a crapshoot. It doesn't exist.
Well,
a crapshoot exists. A vaccine for a virus does not exist and never has existed and never will exist.
Talk to me about this, because it was my understanding that you can identify a strain of a virus, you could hit it with a clean vaccine and knock it out. Am I wrong?
Apparently, it's never been done.
Okay, and again, I don't know.
There's never been a vaccine for a virus ever that I'm aware of.
But yeah,
for diseases, a vaccine is not a disease. A virus is not a disease in the normal sense of the word. In fact, I just found this out 4 or 5 days ago. There's more than a million different coronaviruses.
Right. And the word coronavirus has been around for, what, well over half a century. So
it's nothing new. Nothing new at
all. Right.
No.
Right. And it's the rhinovirus mutations that are problematic. Okay, I'll stipulate to that, as we say in the biz. I'll stipulate to that.
Council. we have some time here to advise people. We got thousands of people listening to you and I. They want to know how to keep them, their children safe, their elderly parents safe. Well, here's what you do. First of all, get yourself away from these congested urban suburban areas. That's number one. If this thing goes away that you and I think it's going to go, densely populated urban suburban areas will be death traps and nothing else. That's all they'll be. If you think you can hold out like Charles and Heston and Omega Man, good luck. Classic film, and it was redone a few years ago. That's not going to happen. You're not going to be Charles and Heston in a three-story building holding off the zombie hordes. You need to get away from these urban suburban areas. A safe area, preferably at least a one-hour drive, where there's safety. Whoever lives there is welcoming you and hope you show up with whatever you've got. Hopefully a place where food can be grown. Hopefully a place where they have a proprietary source of clean drinking water. A supply of electricity, hopefully that would be indefinite if it's powered by solar or wind or hydropower, whatever it might be. And with neighbors, trusted neighbors that are self-sufficient also, not people drawing welfare. A farming community, a ranching community, a place like that where you're surrounded by people who are used to being self-sufficient, and an Amish community might be great. And that needs to happen right now, Doug, not at some point in the future. It needs to happen this week or next week. I don't know how many weeks we've got. Do you?
I wish I did. I'd tell you. No, I don't know, but I think we're later in the game than we realize.
Absolutely. And up until about 8 weeks ago, I was focused a lot on the first Tuesday in November as a flashpoint for civil disorder. I think that timetable's been moved forward closer to us in time. My private sources are telling me, Doug, that what we've got right now will segue into civil disorder coming out of lack of food. The EBT cards stop working, or if the food's just simply not there, we're going to have civil disorder.
Are you saying food shortages in your area? I didn't mean to interrupt divert you.
I'm not yet. We're seeing a nationwide, including my area, they now have supermarkets one entrance only and one exit only, so they don't exceed the number of people allowed in the store.
Right.
And they have people counting the people going in and people counting the people going out. But no charges per se that I'm aware of. We are hearing, one of my listeners, an over-the-road truck driver, he just quit. He couldn't take it anymore. These major truck stops are an island of R&R for these truck drivers. They can take a shower, get a nice hot meal, walk around a little bit. The major truck stops are shut down. You can't go inside and take a shower. You can't sit down and enjoy a meal or walk around inside the premises and take a break. It's being on the road is tough.
Being on the road is tough enough. Believe me.
It's a hard way to make a living. They make a good living, but it's a hard way to make a living, even when everything works properly. And it doesn't. And I'm sure my listener is not the only one that's resigned from that position. We're getting reports of meatpacking plants shutting down because of lack of people. They're fearful of getting sick. I'm sure other food processing plants around the country are experiencing similar shortages of people that are fearful of getting sick, so they simply aren't going to work. Now, the president has authority to have the military force those places to stay open and man them if they need to. It may come down to that, Doug. Come down to that.
Is that necessary, though? You see, what I'm seeing, John, is look, I know this is, again, as I described this, this is an extremely dangerous offensive biological warfare weapon, or weapon of warfare, this virus. So, but are we, the media, are they, regardless of how dangerous this is the media not engaged in overhyping the dangers?
Of course they are.
Okay.
Of course they are.
All right.
Of course they are. The drone footage of the unclaimed bodies being buried on Hart Island, that's an excellent example.
Yeah, let's address this because I've been there. By the way, you can't get on there.
You're not communicated privately about that. Now, New York City has been burying unclaimed bodies on Hart Island since the 1840s.
Right.
Using the current method, which is what the drone footage shows, they've been doing for decades,
yep.
And it's a routine. You know, news, what's news, Doug? News is something unusual, out of the ordinary, or special. That's what news is. Bodies being buried on Hart Island in the manner this drone shows is not news. It's nothing out of the ordinary, nothing special, nothing, it's just simply not news. But people aren't aware of it. So they see a trench. Here's what they do. They use a bulldozer to dig a trench about 12, 14 feet wide, about 10 to 12 feet deep. They bring the pine coffins in and stack them three deep, and then they cover them with some kind of covering over the top of the top coffins, and then they bury about 2 to 3 feet of dirt on top of it.
Yep.
That's been happening for decades. It's not news.
The first time I saw it, John, was back in the early 2000s, and I had accidentally found, I don't want to say strayed there, but I saw it, and I was horrified. I thought, what the hell's going on? Yeah, you know, and I had to ask somebody who said, hey, relax, man. We've been doing this for a long time, and it's right. You know, so, but when I first saw it, I thought, okay, there's something here, you know, but there was nothing there. And that's just people,
right.
Yeah,
right.
People overreact.
Right, do.
Yeah.
There's another video circulating of what appears to be body bags with human bodies laid out on a floor in a building, in a room, claiming to be a hospital in New York. It turns out it's from someplace in Ecuador.
Of course.
And it's being promoted as something taking place in a hospital in New York City. And, of course, we talked a week or two ago about one of the major news affiliates showing footage of an out-of-control emergency room in Italy, claiming it was an out-of-control emergency room in New York City.
Do you know they did that a second time? That same network did that a second time? And said, whoops, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right. Here's something we need some help on, Doug. Maybe you already have this. Hard evidence of the money being paid to hospitals if the death certificate says died of COVID-19 as opposed to grandma was 95 and she was about to die anyway. and she died from pneumonia. But are these hospitals, in fact, getting financial compensation if the death certificate says COVID-19 on it? We need hard evidence of that being the case. I've heard of it. You've probably heard of it too, but I've seen no evidence of you.
I've got some information that Birx is getting information from the University of Washington. They're relying on Chinese data. This is one. Now, this does not address your question directly, but as an indirect aspect of this, University of Washington is using Chinese information, that data, and Birx is using that. The University of Washington study is being paid for by none other than Bill Gates. So that's a very vague answer to your question, but with specific information, I have not found the money.
Well, that's an important detail.
Yes, yes.
We have people talking about the deaths. Well, yeah, people die. People die every day of the week. That's not news. The question is, what are they dying from?
Right.
You know, if you're in your 90s and you're in a nursing home and you're on hospice, you're probably going to die.
Probably.
It's just a matter of when. I mean, you know, you're going to die.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to recover and to be discharged and go dancing. I mean, your life is near the end. Of course it is. So, are these people at the edge of death? They get anything. It's going to kill them. It's going to finish the job. Whether it's COVID-19 or regular flu and influenza, of course it's going to kill them because they're at the edge of death anyway. So is it valid to report somebody who's in a nursing home at the edge of death to begin with? Is it valid to include them as dying from the Chinese COVID-19 flu or not? I don't know. It's really a judgment call.
I think it's disingenuous. I do.
Right. You know, when you got somebody that close to death anyway,
Yeah, and I might have said this on a different broadcast, but I went on a case where a gentleman was hit by a moving vehicle, a car. I happen to know this guy. As a matter of fact, I knew this gentleman, and the driver said, look, he walked right out in front of me. And after an autopsy was done, it was found that he had a heart attack. Before he hit the ground, he was dead before he was hit by that truck or by the car. And that's what killed him, you know. So it wasn't a traffic accident. It was a heart attack. But, John, stay right where you're at, folks. You're listening to the Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. I'll be right back after this network break. Stay right where you're at.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome back to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report. I hope everyone had a happy or a very pleasant Resurrection Day, Resurrection Sunday, to my Jewish friends, Passover. Happy Passover. I want to say thank you for all that you do. Thank you for your support, your belief, your trust in this platform. Really, really. A lot of information already. Hour one, the first segment, talking about the extremely dangerous offensive biological warfare weapon, and the fact that this was indeed created in a BSL-4 lab, and the fact that this was this is a dangerous virus, but it's being hyped and overhyped by the media for cause. Before I get back into the show, I want to mention, you know, these days, I suspect, like other families, I know my family is doing a lot of online shopping. I suspect we are all doing a lot of online shopping. I mean, a lot. But did you know you can make online shopping even better? You can with Honey. Honey is a free online shopping tool that saves you money online. Folks, Honey automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your cart, which makes online shopping finally feel as easy as it's supposed to be. Imagine you're shopping at one of your favorite sites. I mean, look, it doesn't matter. Target, Best Buy, Sephora, Macy's, eBay, Etsy, Walmart, whatever the case might be. Wait a few seconds for it to scan for every promo code on the internet and watch the prices drop. It is amazing. I've personally seen it. I've actually sat next to my wife who's done it. And Eric the Tech has actually made, or saved, I shouldn't say made, saved upwards of $50. We had a piece of equipment we bought at a certain participant store, and I have to say that it was like 49-something, I don't know. And this was just 2 weeks ago. And that one piece of equipment, again, $49. It was like a gift. I'm telling you, it felt good. Yeah, I mean, it felt really good. I probably should reward Eric the Tech for doing that. Anyway, Honey has found it's over 18 million members, over $2 billion in savings. And did you know that Honey supports over 30,000 stores online and they're adding more every day? Users love Honey. That's why it's got over 100,000 plus 5-star reviews on Google Chrome Store. That alone, folks, here's the deal. My friends at Honey, okay, if you're not using Honey is literally passing up free money. And I'm serious about that. It's free to use, installs in just seconds, plus it's backed by PayPal, so you know it's good. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Hagman. You ready again? You ready? Ready? Here it is. Join, J-O-I-N, joinhoney.com/Hagman. joinhoney.com/Hagman. That's joinhoney.com/Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. By the way, HagmanReport.com. Go there, coffee, gourmet coffee. We do support, the proceeds do support, organizations that actually help on the ground fight human and child trafficking and sex trafficking. But gourmet coffee there for you. Detective's Choice, Patriot Blend, and Revolution Blend. We're in a revolution. We're patriots and some of us are detectives. So, and by the way, Detective's Choice is hyper caffeinated. It gives you a little boost. So there it is, HagmanStore.com. And you support this broadcast when you do purchase the coffee. So you're going to be paying a little bit more for it, but understand that's supporting this show. John Moore is my guest. I'm going to get his handsome mug on this show. Having some technical issues getting his handsome mug on the show, but that's all right. That's all right. We'll get it done, right? We'll get it done at some point. He's the man behind thelibertyman.com. He's known as the Liberty Man, and he's known throughout the world, actually. He's got an immensely popular radio show every single day on the Republic Broadcast Network, RBN. Just go to thelibertyman.com for the presence of John Moore, and there you can, right on the top is the player for that day's show. Archives are available at RBN. All right, John, you there?
I'm here.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? Instead of your handsome mug, we'll put up your TR6.
All right. Well, I'll get more photographs of the Triumph in the next few days. During the break, I was working on the technical aspects. After Eric informed us that I may have an issue with one computer, I got two more backups here that between the other two, I think I may find one that will carry the signal the way we want it to be carried. And hopefully next Monday, I'll be up on video as well as audio. Perfect. Getting back to the topic at hand, we have people, men and women, who are fearful, and it's fear based on reality. It's not some hypothetical. It's not some paranoia, is a word thrown about, at least in this case, improperly. And paranoia is one of two things. It's either a fear of something that does not exist, or a fear in excess of a real threat. Now, and that's not what we're talking about here. This threat is real, and it's not excessive if you want to be prepared to deal with it. It really isn't. My friend, Command Sergeant Major Dan Page, has been with me on my show a number of times. He personally spent a year of his life in Central Africa with his counterpart from the Navy SEALs, and of course Command Sergeant Major Page with the Army. They had a motor vehicle driving around Central Africa documenting what the Communist Chinese are doing in Central Africa, which is basically colonizing Central Africa, everything between South Africa and the and the what's called the Sub-Sahara Desert, Sub-Sahara Africa, building roads, building building water treatment plants, building sewage treatment plants, airports, power generating plants, everything that they would need to colonize Central Africa. They built a highway, which began in the late 1950s as the United Nations project, between China and Africa. That highway is now complete and can only be used by the Chinese. Nobody else is allowed to use it. It comes out of the Hindu Kush, goes across Afghanistan, through Iran, through Iraq, into Saudi Arabia, and over to Egypt. They will be building a causeway across the Red Sea. That engineering is already being done. And I know a local businessman. He owns and operates a restaurant. He's from Zambia, and we spent a lot of one-on-one time talking about his home country. His parents and siblings are still there, and the pieces fell into place once we had our conversation as to what's going on in Zambia, which is one of many countries in Central Africa. South America, the same thing. Of course, they don't have a highway going to South America, but the Chinese are all over South and Central America, both, with the exception of El Salvador. To a lesser extent, Brazil. Brazil's kind of a wild card here. Doing the same thing in South America, building infrastructure and preparing to colonize South America and Central America. And, of course, the prize is the United States. We have something that no place else, it doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet, Doug, and that's the ability to grow, harvest, store, and transport food, primarily grains, corn, wheat, soybeans, the other grains, and related agricultural products. There's no place on the planet that can do what we do as efficiently as we do it here. That place does not exist. And China wants it. They don't want our people. They want our agricultural productive real estate. And their plan is to take it over, Doug, and to wipe out Americans.
You know, it's interesting, John, how we as Americans specifically perceive this threat or non-threat from China. Most Americans don't see China as a threat. And it's heavily subjective in nature. It's based on this ever-changing threat narrative within the U.S. And you've got a strong economic and military Chinese presence. It's grown over the past couple of decades. It's expanding, desire to influence those outside of its borders, as you just mentioned. While American economic and military prowess, hey, we're still kind of strong. We're still strong, although we're weakened. The Chinese desire to take over. Well, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a Chinese.
That's right. That's what we're seeing. And they're not bashful about talking about it privately among themselves. But we managed to get a hold of these conversations. One of them is documented at my website. It's an English translation of a speech given by the top Chinese military general to his top people, translated at my website, and they talk about what they want and how they achieve how they intend to do it. They want the United States. They don't want Americans, and how they intend to do it, they intend to do it with biological warfare. And that speech was given, I believe, in 2006, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Not that the date matters. So the evidence is in front of us. Those who pay heed have a better chance of getting out of the way. Those who do not, well, they're going to pay the price, won't they?
Exactly. Christopher Wray, whatever you think of him, he had a conference. He spoke at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is back in February now. And he was talking about China, who is threatening the U.S. economy, national security, with their relentless efforts to steal sensitive technology, proprietary information, so on. And we've seen this happen. We saw it happen under the Clinton regime, Ray described this threat from China, of course, as diverse, multi-layered. He noted that the Chinese government exploits the openness of our economy, our society. And, you know, we've got, I mean, look at Feinstein, look at Pelosi, their coziness with the communist Chinese. And we should name, every time we say China, we should say communist China, because let's not forget they're communists. Anyway, I digress.
That's right. Well, so, yeah. They are comments.
Folks, go to thelibertyman.com, because there you'll find the document that John was talking about, thelibertyman.com. Okay, sorry, I just want to make sure people were directed.
Well, there's nothing to be sorry about that, Doc. We need to get support out. People listen to talk radio for a lot of reasons. They want to pain, they want to inform, they want information. And you know, I got into this 25 years ago to inform people. I was talking to audiences of 25 and 40 and 50 people, and I thought, why don't I talk to thousands of people at one time instead of 50 at a time? Yeah. That's why I got involved in talk radio, basically as a way to help promote the Second Amendment was my mantra back then, almost exclusively. It's a whole subculture of America, the talk radio, and I know my demographics. You know your demographics. They're typically very bright men and women who are successful in their chosen career. Maybe they're retired, more successful in their chosen career before they retired, with children and grandchildren, and they know what's going on because they actually read books, as opposed to most Americans who couldn't find a library if they had to. But our listeners actually read books, and that separates them from the majority of Americans, unfortunately, it does. And when you and I bring evidence to the table, it's evidence that they can verify for themselves, and they appreciate that. My listeners include all kinds of people with serious credentials, and frequently become friends of mine, like a friend of mine who's a bona fide nuclear scientist, for example, we've become very, very good friends over the years. But people are looking to you and me, Doug, for advice and information, so that in these perilous times, and they truly are perilous times, what we are doing and living right now, April 13th, 2020, these are perilous times, and very powerful forces at work. Some of them are in cooperation with each other. Some are not. You know, the pharmaceutical industry has their agenda. The communists have their agenda. The New World Order may think that the communist Chinese are working with them, but they're in for a rude awakening when they find out that the Chinese are pretending to be part of the New World Order when they intend to be the whole New World Order by themselves.
Kind of like that mayor in Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn, who thought, yeah.
Yeah.
You started off by saying, what do people do now? If you can get an hour away from an urban area, stay with people, whatever, if you've got a go-to place, whatever. But what else can people do? Because right now, people are afraid. And you know, I'm afraid, John, that when we come out of the other side of this, whatever this might be, and I don't like what we're in, not one bit, but, we're going to be a different society. But what else can people do? What do you recommend people to do? I'm a big proponent. Every time you go to the grocery store, and that's getting harder and harder to do these days because you take your life in your hands almost, but what, buy an extra can or two or three, whatever they'll let you buy at this point. Isn't that interesting? They'll let you buy, you know, some say, oh, you can't, no more than two cans, no more than four cans. Do you ever think you'd see that in America? There we go.
I knew it was possible. I never, it's one of those things I knew it's possible because of my base of knowledge. I hoped it would never be here, but it's here.
Yep.
It's here right now. And, we have to deal with it, regardless of who's behind it, how it got going. It is here. It's in our face right now, and we need to deal with it. So what do people do? The basic are food, water, shelter, protection, medical supplies, all those things that people know. They don't need to be told. Water becomes a really big issue really quick, quicker than anything else other than somebody in your face with a gun. It becomes a big issue really quickly. And a proprietary source of potable water, in my opinion, is not optional. It's mandatory. You can store up water, but you can only do that, so long. Which brings up again, a safe haven away from a city. And that source of water needs to be, not only proprietary, but something that you can get out of the ground. If it takes electricity to get it out of the ground, once the electricity is gone, your water's gone. So that becomes a pretty big issue pretty quickly, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. So you need an alternative way of getting it out of the ground if it's in the ground. If you've got a well, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You need a hand pump crank thing. Yeah.
Right. Until you're a city boy.
Yeah. One of them things.
One of them things. Yeah. There's an old saying, once you get about 200 miles west of me, that the cows pump, the cows cut the firewood and the wind pumps the water. There's no trees. Once you get 200 miles west of me, there's almost no trees for a lot of the west, which is why there's very few people out there. It's very dry, very dry. But where my home is in the Arkansas, Missouri Ozarks, we have plenty of water. We have a mild, relatively mild winter, long growing season, low population density, it's just a good, healthy place to be and to raise a family in normal times. I'll ask you, of the states where battles were fought in a civil war, which state had the most battles, Doug?
Which state had the most battles? How about Virginia? Help me out here. I don't know.
Missouri.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It wasn't General Lee versus General Grant. It was thousands of guerrilla warfare battles, small units. Not the major battles we saw back in Virginia and places like that. Thousands of small battles of small groups of men attacking other small groups of men. Missouri is ideal guerrilla warfare territory with these hills and forests that we've got. And it will once again become the same thing if it comes down to it. An absolute nightmare for an invading army and a great place for guerrilla warriors to do what was done so successfully in South Vietnam, where the barefoot peasants of Vietnam stood up to the most powerful military on the planet, with great success, by the way. I don't want to see that happen. I'd much rather be enjoying my Triumph sports car than dealing with guerrilla warfare. But I'll do whatever I need to do to keep my family safe. That's what I'll do. How about you, Doug?
Yeah, me too. And I, the more I look at this, the more I look at this situation, and I'm talking about the corona, the Chinese party, Communist Chinese Party coronavirus threat, the more I see us being softened up, the more I see us needing to get hardened up in other ways. And yes, I need to resolve, and I think this is, everyone needs to do this. They need to make a decision. It's the time for decide. I suppose the time for deciding is past, but we need to make a firm commitment that we will do whatever it takes. Number one, to preserve freedom, preserve our family, our heritage, our legacy, our country, and our rights given by God. And look, I don't know how that's gonna look or play out. But I'll tell you what, I don't need some tyrannical governor telling me I can't go and buy a flag or buy a handgun or buy a can of soup or whatever. And, I need to, look at this point, John, I think that we are so conditioned to this a power that these people have or the authority they think they have. And it really pisses me off, that we're not standing up a lot sooner and saying, no, you're not going to tell me that I've got to do X, Y, or Z, especially if it's unconstitutional. And, I can see a breaking point. I don't know what it is, but I can see one, you know, we're approaching a breaking point here somewhere. And I don't know.
I agree with you. And I was talking to a friend the other day. He's a retired healthcare professional. And he says, John, our country's going, our society's going to change, just like it did after 9/11/01. There was a time, Doug, when if I wanted to board an airplane with a commercial airline with a pistol, I would just get my ticket, walk into the plane with my pistol in a carrying case, hand it to the very attractive female stewardess, because they had no homosexual flight attendants at the time. And she would take it up front, put it in the pilot's compartment, and in the flight, she would hand it back to me, and I'd walk off the plane.
Yeah.
And there was no security. That's just the way it was done.
Yeah.
Do you remember
paying for your seat after you were seated, been paid in cash? I came at the very end of that time period where you could actually board a plane and they would collect your cash. Generally speaking, when it was...
Well, that's the way it was done on a train. It's still done on a train.
On a train,
you can get
on, yes.
You can get on a train. You can get on Amtrak now, and I'm not so sure, but you can get an upgrade after you're on it. I think you have to have a ticket to board the train, but and then maybe pay for an upgrade once you're on it if you choose to. But yeah, I never did that personally, but I'm aware it did happen. Yes.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly the circumstances, whether it was a layover and then the other part of the leg of the flight. I can't remember, but I do remember being able to do that or having a pass going on and then seeing people pay cash, not for drinks, but for, you know, the flight. But that, boy, that's a long time ago. But see, you know, here we are, post 2001, the 9/11, all these things come into play, all this, the backscatter radiation machines, you got to stand there, take your shoes off, put your shoes on, don't take them off, can't have drinks, can't have lotion, can't have 4 ounces, can't have 3 ounces, what the hell's going on? And you get a bunch of Walmart greeting TSA agents there, acting like Stasi guards or acting like guards. To pretend it's, you know, for security reasons?
It brings up a good point. The fall of 2001, I was on Fox News twice nationwide being interviewed about terrorism. And there was a young female producer from New York. She talked way too fast. And so I did my first show, and we had good numbers, and she called me up. She said, John, let's do it next week. I said, okay. And so we did a second show and got even better numbers. So she says, well, John, you're doing good here. We're going to do another show with you. What would you like to talk about next? So I said, okay, let's talk about the feel-good, make-believe security at these airports. She says, I'll talk to my boss. I'll get back with you. She called me up the next day. She says, John, it's too scary. We can't talk about that. And that was the end of my Fox News career back in 2001, 19 years ago.
Sure.
A friend of mine, former Special Forces colonel, he was hired to do a security survey for the St. Louis airport. And he reported back to the people that hired him that ran the airport, basically said, gentlemen, what you have won't work. And that was that. That was that. What goes on at these airports is little. It's public relations. It's all it is.
Isn't it interesting, though, the very people who push the backscatter X-ray machines and the radiator, you know, whatever, the scanner machines, had... They made out that it was a money maker. And so compare that to what's happening today with this coronavirus, the vaccines, they're pushing the vaccines. It's a money maker. Follow the money. I mean, everyone should have an ID, you know, this ID 2020 crap that's out there. with this ID 2020 Alliance. If you look at who's on the board of directors, the Alliance partners, I mean, they're all vaccine pushers. They're all, and some of the Alliance partners are related to Fauci and Birx. I mean, what the hell? You know?
Well, it's, you know, as the old saying goes, you got to follow the money. If you follow the money trail, you'll find the connections, who's connected to who, what the chain of command is, and how the whole thing is put together if you just follow the money trail. And that's how it's done. That's exactly how it's done.
What,
and
let me ask you, okay, so we have an election in just over 200 days, a federal election. How is this going to play out? Because I can see the left saying, well, we're going to have mail-in ballots. And, oh, do I need to talk about where the problems are there? The voter ID laws that are in effect, we need to enforce the voter ID laws. How would that work out in a digital and or mail-in, kind of campaign? So what do you see coming up for the election of 2020? I don't see a normal election. I don't know what, but I don't see it nor being normal. I don't know what the hell I'm looking at, but what do you see?
Well, the Judicial Watch is filing some lawsuits to clean up their voter rolls, to get the dead people off the voters' rolls. That I hope that happens. There's a lot of unknowns. We've got May, June, July, August, September, October. We've got basically 6 months to do whatever they're going to do. And I hope that's enough done in time that we can have something we can count as being a normal, fair, and free election.
I hope so. Yeah.
That remains to be seen. And I don't know, Doug. It's with these unknowns. Now, part of what we're worried about is speculation. Mail-in ballots are notoriously unreliable, and if we have a free and fair election, President Trump will be reelected. That's a given. Of course, he will.
Sure.
There's some doubt that we won't have an election. That's on the table, as serious as that sounds and as unlikely as it sounds. It's on the table. It really is.
I think everything's on the table right now. I don't know, John. If you'd have asked me a year ago, I'd say, some of the stuff would be at the fringe, but I think everything's on the table, in my view.
I agree. And we're talking about elections. We got more than 3,000 counties in the United States. The majority of them have an elected sheriff with all the constitutional authority and power of an elected sheriff. You need to make sure that your sheriff being elected in your area is a constitution-believing sheriff and will do the right thing for the right reasons. That needs to happen.
Amen. That's right. And I think
that's incredibly important.
Yeah. And there was an article in the Federalist. Americans need to start pushing back against draconian lockdowns. You know, I think we really need to start. Look, I get the fact that we're dealing with a very dangerous virus. However, we need to have plans about reopening the economy, the reopening the country. State governors are, the ones that are pushing these draconian lockdowns, as opposed to the federal government, which is how it should operate. But we need to, in my view anyway, to look at getting these parts moving again, or else we're not going to have a country to come back with or come back to. I don't know. I don't know. Is it going to exacerbate the virus problem? Perhaps. But what's the alternative? Just curious. I mean, what do you think? I mean, what's your thoughts on this?
Our opposition, think globally, act locally.
There you go.
Let's go down to basics. almost every county has a Republican Central Committee.
Yes.
The people on the committee are elected. I am the Republican committeeman for my township, mostly because nobody else put their name on the ballot. That's all it takes. You go into the county clerk's office or whatever they call it in your county, you file to be a member of the Republican Central Committee representing your township. There's about a 50-50 chance that you'll be unopposed because nobody else cares or even knows about it. Once you've done that and you're elected, you'll become on a first-name basis with all the elected officials in the county government, the sheriff, the various people running the collector's office, assessor's office, the county clerk, and so forth. And you'll get to know these people. They'll get to know you. And you'll find out who is a patriot and supports the Constitution and who doesn't. And when it comes time for election, you'll know what to do and why to do it in terms of getting patriots elected into these positions. Mostly they're going to be anyway, the majority of the time, especially the sheriff. The sheriff can tell the FBI to take a hike in this county. The sheriff can tell the DEA to take a hike and any other federal law enforcement. Because they're the top law enforcement official in that county. And that's how important these sheriffs are, Doug. Sheriff in Waco, Texas, could have shut down the FBI and the ATF and sent them home, which he should have done, and avoided all those people being murdered down there. But he didn't do it. I assume it was a man because most of the sheriffs are there. I use that as an example. The sheriff up there in where Randy Reeder was.
Yeah.
That sheriff could have and should have taken control of that. Otherwise, it's been wildly out of control and becoming a national incident, which it did become. So these sheriffs are very important. We need to elect constitution supporting sheriffs who will stand up to federal pressure if they need to do the right thing for the right reasons. The primary job of a sheriff is to protect the people in the county, isn't it, though?
Yes. Well, I mean, look, the sheriff has the duty, the constitutional duty to say, get out. I mean, we're following the Constitution of the United States. I'm the chief law enforcement officer. Get out. And don't let the door hit you, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you want to come back to my county, my permission first.
Yes.
They have that authority. They do. Now, before I did my homework, I understood the historical nature and legal background of the militia in this country. I would meet these county sheriffs that had maybe a dozen or 20 men and women under their command. They'd be wearing the rank of a full-bird colonel, or maybe one or two stars or more stars of a general. And I thought, man, what's this guy wearing this high rank for? He's only got 20 people working for him. It turns out they got the guy before him, historically and legally, the county sheriff is the commander of the county militia, which could easily be thousands of men and women, easily, mm-hmm. easily. And that's why they were the rank of a full-bird colonel or maybe a general, a brigadier general or whatever it might be, major general. And they still have that authority in most states. By statute, to be the commander of the county militia, and in a worst case scenario, they instantly take on that role once again, Doug, of being the commander of the county militia to protect the people of that county. That's how important this is, and it may very well come down to that, Doug.
Yeah, it might. I would hope that our sheriffs have that degree of fortitude in the. Temerity to say, you know what, I'm taking over. I'm the guy, or I'm the person, and take over. I don't know. I'm looking at this, John, and this whole situation right now. What the gains that President Trump made in terms of the economy in three and a half years have all but been erased in the last 3.5 months.
Well, yes and no. the foundation that those gains was built on is still there. The manufacturing capacity that he's brought back to this country is still there. The people that made this happen are still here. Getting it going again will not be easy. And depending on what kind of hurdles are put in his way, but we have intelligent, productive people anxious to get back to work and get this country going again. Nobody's saying it's going to be easy, but I will say that what happened the past 3.5 years can take place again. It'll be a struggle. It won't be easy. And there's going to be hardship. There's going to be pain. But it is doable. I'm optimistic that it is doable, assuming we don't end up in a full-blown war with China, which is certainly on my radar. How about you, Doug?
Yeah. I'm looking at right now Pelosi coming out as Speaker of the House saying, you know what, Congress is not going to reopen in any time in April. And she's sending out warnings to Donald Trump not to restart the economy. And she told Politico, there's an interview with Politico last Friday. It's kind of a little offbeat, but nonetheless, in keeping with the topic matter here, she said that she's considering keeping the House of Representatives out of session longer than the April 20th return from recess date, which, okay. I mean, if it's a day, two, three, maybe even a week, I can understand that. But she's saying, no, it might not be well into May. And she's warned Donald Trump to keep the country under lockdown even longer. And she's drafting yet a fourth coronavirus package of all things to be introduced when Congress returns from recess.
Amazing.
You know,
Amazing.
With our money, by the way, you know, it's baloney. This is going to be a Dodge City situation.
She's appealing to her base is what she's doing.
Yeah.
She's appealing to her base, and all things being equal, the Republicans will take control of the House again in November. They won't take office, of course, until the third or fourth week of January. So we got more than half a year to deal with these people still, at least. A lot can happen in 6 or 8 months, can't it, Doug?
Yeah, yeah. Have you been, I'm just curious, and by the way, we got about 18 minutes left of the show or thereabouts, so feel free to take it wherever, but I'm just curious, have you been like watching or any thoughts on Hillary Clinton, any thoughts on, I mean, you see Biden as a presumptive, you know, Democratic nominee, but man, I'm just wondering if there's something going on, there's a trick up someone's sleeve. Biden, you know, is a Tuesday, is it Wednesday kind of guy. Hey, let me sniff your hair. You know, I just don't see, I don't know. I just don't see Biden as being a viable candidate. I don't know. What do you think?
Probably the most viable person would be Obama, unfortunately. I don't believe since the 19th century, we had some presidents stuck around D.C. In the 19th century, but I don't believe in the 20th century forward that I'm aware of, we had presidents stuck around Washington, D.C.
No.
when their term was over. Are you aware of any?
No, no, not in D.C., no.
They want to get the hell out of Dodge and get their life back. Obama is right down the street from the White House. When I say right down the street, Washington, D.C. is a fairly compact place. You can't be in Washington, D.C. and be more than a 10-minute ride from the White House. That's not possible. So he's right down the street with his sidekick, Valerie Jarrett, who actually ran the White House when he was playing golf most of the time. Lots of discussion about Obama's connections to the United Nations. There are players in this. He has a track record that would be embraced by the mass media immediately, by about half the electorate immediately, as being viable, as being a good guy for the right reasons. So I think that if it wouldn't be an election, it would be some kind of appointed emergency type thing.
Right, because the 22nd Amendment prohibits. Yeah, I got to tell you, the 22nd Amendment prohibits Obama. There's only two people right now that could be that have held the office of president that could be reelected, and that's obviously Donald Trump And if you want to throw in Jimmy Carter in there, throw him in there. But other than that, unless there, you know, I mean, no other living president can be reelected
right,
again.
Right. Under normal conditions.
Right. So
with conforming with the Constitution. But we're already in quicksand when it comes to the Constitution and normality.
yeah, that's true.
And we are. We've gone through a lot, never had this happen. We went through World War II with our economy being shut down. We went through the 1918 Spanish flu, where we quarantined the sick people, not the healthy people. And the Depression, where we were hard times, but we got through that okay. There's no precedence for this. I'm not aware of any time where there's been a pandemic where you quarantine the healthy people instead of the sick people. That's crazy. That's what we're doing.
Well, you know, again, I've heard it said, and I've wondered where the genesis of the word COVID came from. Some people will say certificate of vaccination ID. Okay. Now, look, I don't know if that's the case. All right. I don't know, but I certainly wouldn't surprise me. So I've never, as you said, I've never seen a situation where a healthy population is quarantined. Okay. You identify those who are sick. And you quarantine right. those people, but you don't quarantine the people who aren't sick. And you certainly, I mean.
Well, they're quarantined. We quarantine everybody, sick people and healthy people.
Okay.
That's what we're doing now.
Right.
We've quarantined everybody, the healthy and the sick.
But that's not the way to do things, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not. Now, we have many centuries of pandemics and how you deal with them. You quarantine the sick people. That's what works.
Right.
There's nothing fun or pleasant about it, but it's what works. And doing what we're doing now is literally destroying our economy, bringing it back. There's lots of speculation, but it's, I call it informed speculation. We got people with all these letters behind their name for being economists, but they're just guessing also because it's never been done before.
Sure. Yeah. Mm, okay. Well, all right. And here we are. So, every day I'm looking for, every day, I know you're doing research every day. By the way, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Folks, if you're not listening to his show,
put it in your browser. Don't use a search engine. Do not use a search engine to get to thelibertyman.com. Put it directly in your browser. Otherwise, you'll end up 20 different places you don't want to be. right in the browser, not in search engine.
That's right. Or easier, go to Hagman Report Live and click on the link. It'll take you right through his website. So there. But
well,
listen to the show.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. There we go.
It's up to you here in the remaining quarter hour we have.
We'll go to specific points. First of all, get your spiritual house in order. That needs to become a daily part of your life. Read the Bible every day. I do that. I read the Bible every day. The last 2 days, I read about the Easter matter, of course. And focus on skills. If you don't have current first aid certificate, get it. If you don't have current CPR, get it. Get ham radio skills. There's time to do that. Communications is a matter of life and death in a fast-moving crisis. And as I learned during the Tet Offensive of 1968, if you don't know what's going on, it'll drive you crazy. Your mind instantly will go to a worst-case scenario. So be able to intercept all the shortwave frequencies, all the emergency frequencies, not only the police, but the fire departments, the paramedics, even the local utility companies and road repair crews. If there's a crisis, these people will be involved also. And get the equipment to do that. And as Jim Rawl says with Survival Blog, one is none, two is one. Any piece of equipment that's really, really important, get two of them, because inevitably something will break. That's almost inevitable. The Army doesn't issue pistols to the average GI, but But most of us had pistols anyway, Doug. Army be damned. You know, I always have, the Army never issued me a 1911 pistol, but I had my own. I bought it while I was in Vietnam, and I sold it before I left. So, and get spare parts. Most of your listeners have a firearm, but they don't have any spare parts. Get spare parts for those firearms. Your $1,000 rifle would be an expensive doorstop because a $1 part broke. And that what breaks? Springs, extractors, and firing pins. I say again, springs, extractors, and firing pins. You can get all those spare parts for your $1,000 or $2,000 rifle for probably $20. And these things do break.
Point.
They routinely break. They routinely break.
Yeah, that's a good point.
People don't do this, Doug. People don't get spare parts for their rifles, shotguns, and pistols. They don't do it. But they need to, and they can do it now while they can.
Well, you still can. That's right. I can kick myself for not for not thinking about that. Spare parts for your guns. $20 worth of spare parts. You're right. Springs, firing pins.
Springs, extractors, and firing pins. Yeah. That's what breaks. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's a 100-year-old rifle or one you just bought and brand new.
That's right.
What breaks on firearms. Springs, extractors, and firing pins. If you don't understand this, you need to find a local, competent, certified gunsmith. They can get the parts. They get them shipped in typically in a week or so, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not optional. You need to have these spare parts.
You do. You do. And I'm glad you mentioned that because that's something that I sadly, this is the first time I've mentioned this on this program. Now, what about communication? You mentioned this. You mentioned monitoring communications. Many people I've gotten emails from saying, well, you know, how do you get a ham radio license and such? You know, look, I'm okay with a ham radio license, but I'm more interested in listening to what people are saying. You know, I don't need to speak. I need to listen. So, plus these scanners, you know, the old time scanners, the police, fire, medical and stuff.
Right.
That's a very valuable tool too. I mean, you can get one of those for $69-70 on the internet.
That's right. That's right. Now a lot of the bigger departments are going to encryption, but not all of them. And fire departments rarely go to encryption because they simply don't have any need for it. The paramedics rarely go to encryption. So there's a lot you can listen to. And I mentioned like the road repair crews and the utility companies. They have radios also, and they talk also, and you can learn a lot from other than police. Military frequencies, they typically don't use encryption and so forth. It's important to get this equipment now and learn how to use it now rather than fumbling around when the lights are off and you've got something hooked up to a car battery and you're trying to figure out how this thing works. Doing it now when you're not under stress would be a smart thing, wouldn't it, Doug?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I'm looking at my notes here.
Now you'll be getting the emails what radio to buy. Start out with a hand crank AM, FM, shortwave weather band radio. They have a flashlight built in. You can charge up your cell phone. The most expensive one you can buy costs about $80.
Right.
And you can find those on Amazon. And, you know, get it. I mean, get them now. They're cheap, they're quickly and easily available, and if you got it, you got it. If you don't, you don't.
You know, I can't remember if I asked you this. I'm going to get an email or two or three from people. Are you big on holding metals like gold and silver? Are you a proponent of that?
Well, after I've got all the ordnance steel and brass and lead that I need. Sure, why not? some Morgan silver dollars and so forth. Of course, I've got some. I don't, you know, it's a matter of personal choice. My Triumph sports car is a collectible that will maintain its value and have value in the future.
Sure.
And it's more fun than a stack of silver coins.
Bring the U-Haul back here, Fred, and take this load of silver. Yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
And by the way, you know, you mentioned that earlier, and you mentioned it again. You know what? As we go through this, I think it's important. We have to keep enjoying life, don't we? I mean, if our, and that's, you said this too, spiritual house in order. And if we have that, we know how this story ends. We know we are victorious in the end through our Lord and Savior. And you know something to me, sometimes you just have to, let go, trust
God.
Well,
even the Viet Cong had entertainment groups that went around in the jungle to entertain the troops. Hmm. Even the Viet Cong did that. There were traveling groups of men and women who would could play instruments and sing out in the jungle for the Viet Cong. Now, if they were doing it, that tells you the importance that it is for troop morale.
Yep.
to have entertainment for the troops. The GIs had, we had movies, we had the Bob Hope Show, of course, that kind of went around. Troop morale is not optional. That's true of all soldiers all the time in any war, any place. So that's part of it also, is to be able to entertain the troops with music or board games or movies or whatever it is. If it does degrade into where we're having that kind of situation, keeping the troop morale up with the best food that you can prepare and some music or movies or whatever it is, books, that's not optional. That's just as important as the other things, as having good sanitation, for example. Very important.
Hey, I got to ask you this. Those people who have purchased freeze-dried food, I'm going to get an email about this. In fact, I already got one, and this is about a week and a half ago. I haven't responded yet. Have you fixed, for example, have you opened up a can of freeze-dried food and fixed maybe, I don't know, turkey tetrazzini or whatever, just to see how it tastes? Have you done that?
I have, and it's very tasty.
Okay.
Mountain House, for example, it's, of course, I'm not some kind of gourmet when it comes to eating. I actually liked sea rations and liked army food when I was eating in the mess hall. So I'm pretty easy to please, but what can I say? My wife would make fun of me when she met me. I would eat different canned foods and be quite happy with SpaghettiOs or something like that.
Sure.
So I find the Mountain House food and other freeze-dried foods very tasty for myself. But something I found out in the Army is that if the food doesn't taste the way Mama fixed it before these guys left home as a 19-year-old, they're not going to like it, doesn't matter how well prepared it is.
That's right.
And that's just human nature. People have an expectation for how food should taste. If it doesn't meet that expectation, no matter how good it is, they're not going to like it.
You know what I found? I'll send an email to this person who emailed me. I found spices. The proper spice. If you add spices to the food, and I'm not talking about overdoing
it. Absolutely.
You know, that makes all the difference in the world. Make sure you have, salt, pepper, condiments, and what have you. And seriously, it's not bad at all. So, and I kind of agree with you. I'm kind of a simple guy myself. I could sit and eat a can of ravioli, Chef Boyardee ravioli if I had to, you know, or whatever, or, freeze dried, whatever.
Or chili man chili, yeah.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of Green Berets would carry the Tabasco sauce with them to help spice up stuff. And it helps the flora in your gut also to have that Tabasco sauce to digest unfamiliar foods. So Tabasco, I'm a big proponent of spices, Tabasco sauce, and other spices. They're cheap and easy to get now, and will help a boring diet. If you got beans and rice, which will keep you alive and provide all the nutrients except vitamin C, having a good stock of spices would help a lot, wouldn't it, Doug?
I think so. That's just my view, and I'm sticking to it.
Mm-hmm.
John, we're at the just about at the end of the program. What's up this week for your show? You want to tell people what they can expect on your show this week?
tomorrow morning. I hope to have Steve Ben Noon, first hour, former CIA field agent. Wednesday morning, Professor McCanny, first hour. They're talking about the things that he knows about. Second hour, and I need to connect you up with Jeff Nyquist. He's an expert on international economics conspiracy. Thursday morning, Dr. Lynn Horowitz, who is qualified as anybody to talk about viruses and biological weapons. Second hour, Steve Hunt, the John Moore Radio Show financial advisor. Friday, we have Emergency Survival Communications and Ham Radio, the first hour, and Dr. Lynn Wilbert talking about health-related matters, the second hour. So it's the usual lineup of experts talking about things that people need to know about.
Are your guests equally... I mean, they sound like that. I know Jeff Nyquist. Are they pretty much on par with like you and I in terms of, man, things aren't right. Things are going bad. We have to, you know, prepare. I mean,
to a greater or lesser extent, Dr. Wilbert is a great guy, but he doesn't understand the geopolitical things nearly as well as you and I do. And quite frankly, doesn't want to.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean,
that's okay.
Yeah,
that's
okay. But people enter. They provide their strong suit, you know, during the interviews. And folks, I would urge everyone, seriously, listen to the John Moore Show live on RBN. Go to thelibertyman.com. There it is, right there on your website, thelibertyman.com. Or there it is on your screen, I should say. Go there. And it's in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. The link, it'll take you right to what you're seeing right there. And, of course, you can play today's show and then tomorrow's show. Or you can go to the archives. And it's all there. Plus, you can see John's TR6 as well as other things. Closing thoughts as we start another week. Closing thoughts.
Another week.
Yes.
I got a new computer ready to go for next week for video.
Okay.
And hopefully it will work the way we want it to, Doug.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yep. A lot of people want to see your handsome mug on screen. So I can't wait for that.
All right.
All right, my man.
Okay.
I appreciate
it. Have a great week.
Yeah, you too,
my
friend.
Call me if you need anything, Doug.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Doug.
All right. Folks, that was, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. And, wow. You know, say what you will. I think that we've put together a pretty doggone good, I think a pretty good doggone good network involving John Moore and others. And John, if you listen to his programs, he gets into some pretty deep subjects with his guests. Jeff Nyquist, as you heard, of course, I'll have him come on our show. So visit John Moore, thelibertyman.com, and I appreciate his time. And as I said at the beginning, I just want to reaffirm what I said here in the closing moments that I've got. Folks, what I believe we're dealing with, it's the coronavirus, the Chinese Party, the Communist Chinese Party coronavirus, the Wuhan virus, is extremely dangerous. It's an offensive biological weapon. I have every reason to believe, if you haven't done so already, go to band.video and listen to Dr. Francis Boyle from yesterday. I'm going to tell you, or from yesterday or Saturday, I'm not sure. But I'm going to tell you this. When you're looking at what we're dealing with this virus, and you compare it in my thinking, you compare it to the anthrax attacks back in 2001, 2002. You talk about nanotechnology. You talk about the remember how the anthrax was aerosolized? Nanotechnology, if you will, in that realm. Well, when you're looking at the anthrax, when you had a trillion spores, or could put a trillion spores in a gram, you're looking right now at a size in nanotechnology of 120 microns in terms of this coronavirus. So I see similarities here. and I see a weaponized version of a coronavirus that originated or came from or was, was released from Wuhan, and it was blamed on that wet market, of course. But that said, you look at the interconnectivity between the FDA, Harvard University, University of North Carolina, the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease, that's NIAID, as well as the NIH. Folks, I'm going to tell you something. Dig deep and you will see, I believe, the network behind this bioweapon that includes globalists working in tandem with the Chinese. I hope I made myself clear in the opening statement as well as this closing statement. We need to fight. We need to expose this. And we need to say, you know what? No, we're not going to sacrifice liberty for the appearance of safety. And certainly no to this massive vaccine push. Thank you so much for your belief and trust. God bless each and every one of you. Until tomorrow, have a good night.